This is an adult-oriented podcast involving discussions about sex and the BDSM lifestyle. If you do not wish to hear about these things, or if you are under 18 years of age, stop listening now. This isn't the show for you. I torture you. And welcome back to Adventures in Kink. I am BK.
I'm Princess Pita.
How are you, Princess?
I'm good. How are you? You've had a very long week this
week.
I'm
very tired.
This is day 6 of a 7-day work week.
Yes, today was day 6.
Yeah. So it's been a very long week.
It has. Very long. One more day, I'm going to make it.
That's good to know. Mm-hmm. Before we get started on today's topics, we wanted to, shout out to our friends in Bondage Expo Denver. Yes. Out there having fun.
Having fun in Colorado.
Without us.
Bondage Expo Denver. I was actually just looking at some pictures from there.
Nice.
See? Look.
I've been seeing people posting and looks like they're having a good time, so.
Which is very good.
And I know they're starting to get the launch party for Bad Dallas ready to go. That's here next month.
That is next month. It's coming up really quickly, yes.
Yep. So things are moving along.
It is moving along very quickly. This year has really flown by, hasn't it?
It really has. It's been 9 months since you moved in.
It has.
Crazy. Time flies when you're having fun.
We do have our fun, don't we?
Yes, we do.
We're out here doing prep work for the show here tonight. And I had made a purchase of like a little beginner violet wand kit.
We have mentioned the violet wand.
Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. We played with that before. But the other day, maybe a month or so ago, before I even got the violet wand, I had got some, I got it at Tractor Supply. It's a portable electric fence. Basically, it's rope with a wire that runs through it. And I wrapped some around your arm just to see while we were doing some of the prep work ahead of time. Not because I was trying to distract you, but because I was trying to distract you and make you smile, which yeah. It did. And so now we get to find some time to put some.
Well, maybe if we get through this podcast, we can.
Hey, there's a thought. Put some of this rope on you. In various precarious places.
And see what happens.
And touch it with a violet wand and see if you don't feel it all over.
So what is on your mind this week?
Well, this week I kind of wanted to talk about what goes in your bag when you go out to play. Either to a dungeon or public party or even a private house party.
I would think that things would change depending on the venue that you're going to, but not
slightly,
but not a lot. Yeah.
Not necessarily, it would be different going to play in a hotel with someone one-on-one or a small group of 3 or 4 people.
Right.
Because likely you're going to stay in the hotel room and you're going to have toiletries.
Shampoo and conditioner
and
sleeping clothes and things like that.
Who sleeps in clothes?
I do because I get cold.
You get cold. That's true.
So did you want to start with the top side or the bottom side?
We can start with the top side because that'll probably be the easiest because toys, right? Well, there's actually more that goes into my bag. I'm going to actually go through what I carry and some people carry this and some people carry different. I actually carry more than one bag because I do make toys. So I will sometimes carry a bag with some just various odds and ends. If we're going to be playing in a public play space, I will carry in my extra bag of things that people may want to buy, items that I know that I'm going to use at that party that people might catch their eye and then be like, ooh, could I get one of those? And well, I happen to have one here in this bag. So sometimes I'll do that. And sometimes I carry extra things because sometimes people ask ahead of time, are you going to be there? Are you going to have stuff to sell? Or, you know, it's good to have, you know, new toys all the time. Everyone right. wants new things all the time. So I will carry a bag of toys for, like, if I have a prearranged play partner that I'm meeting or that we're meeting or even pickup play or whatever, I will have a bag of toys just for that. And I will try not to, if I can at all help it, not use toys on more than one person in an evening. Well, you just, it's a flogger. It goes on the skin. Yeah, but what's on the skin? The skin constantly replenishes itself. That's why you have dust and stuff in your house. That's dead skin floating around. And one person may not want to wear someone else's dead skin on their back or wherever they're being flogged. So.
And there's also the possibility of breaking skin, even just the tiniest amount.
Exactly. And some, I'll say this, some STDs are transferable through toys. So you got to be really careful with some of that. So that's why I always like to say, you know, everyone should have their own toys that are going to be used on them. And if, you know, as a top, you are asked to use their toys, don't take that as being offended and they don't like your toys. It's that those are their toys. They know where they've been, and it's just a safety thing. And we're all supposed to be about safety. So safety first.
Yes.
So another thing that I will carry in my bag, because so many of my lady friends, and I, not a complaint, because I really, you know, I treasure their friendships and their beautiful bodies, and some of them just don't wear panties. Yes, I'm staring at her. She's dressed while we're recording. Don't worry. Thank you. She flashed me. I like that. She's mine. It's okay. I can hear people groaning now. It's all right. So I will carry a selection of various sizes of panties just because. And all that does and all that's for is, you know, if I happen to be doing a play scene with someone that, you know, the panties are, it's all they're wearing. Well, if they weren't wearing that and a flogger accidentally got between their legs, some people get really excited and turned on when they're being flogged or caned or whatever.
Well, and it's in your personal rules for play that's listed on your FET page.
Yes.
That you don't play without panties because for that very reason, because you're trying to protect your toys as much as possible.
Right.
And
now, the bag of toys that I use on other people, you know, I'll bring them home and I'll clean them and sanitize them. And I'm working on a spray that you can kind of spritz on that will be quick drying, that will sanitize anything that it may have picked up. But ultimately, you want to put some stuff on them and you want to let them sit and you really want to let them get dry. And it's a good process sometimes.
And at some point, maybe we'll talk about the process for cleaning toys properly.
Yes, I think that's a good idea. But this is not the time. We're talking about what's actually in the bag. So
right.
I would have floggers and I would have, obviously, I said panties to wear if they wanted to play. And then they would obviously get to keep those because
don't want them back.
We're not doing other people's laundry. Y'all do y'all's own laundry now, okay? All right. So then I would also have paddles, a variety of wood or the rubber tire tread evil things. A belt on a stick will likely be in there.
Your canes and crops.
Canes and crops. Those are actually would be in a separate thing I have for those. For people who are always confuzzled by what to do with canes and crops, how to transport these things because they don't fit in a bag. Put them in a poster presentation tube.
Like a document tube.
Document tube. I think of the big posters. Rolled up blueprints in those
tubes.
Basically
a blueprint tube.
Yeah,
that's
they
how
sell
started,
those.
Yeah.
They sell those at most office supply stores, and they come in various sizes. If you have 50 canes, they make a pretty big round one that's about 5 inches in diameter, I believe, all the way down to about a 3-inch or 2-inch. What's the one that we usually carry there?
It's probably 3 inches.
I think it's about 3 inches. I think the biggest ones, I think they make them up to 8 inches, but I'm not sure. I may need one that big. I don't know. I've got to make a bunch of canes.
I hope somebody else is carrying it.
Yeah.
Because that would be very heavy.
Well, we'll put it on wheels. Anyway.
There we go.
We have two of those. And one is canes that I would have that I would use on others or that are for sale. And I do wrap the ones that are for sale with tissue paper to not only keep them from being damaged, but to also keep them, because if I've used a cane on someone, you don't want it touching all the other canes. But then all the ones that are for use on you go in
my bag,
your cane case. Okay, so floggers, paddles, panties, canes, and crops. I also might slip a shambok in there just because I'm evil like that. Cuffs for using, like, to put someone, attach them to a spanking bench or St. Andrew's cross or something. Nipple clamps of various kinds. I usually typically have three different kinds. The traditional alligator clamps that are adjustable, a type that's a vice that's also adjustable, being a vice, and then the clover clamps. And then different floggers, you know, could be various different ones because I make a variety of different kinds. And I try and have a bunch of those. But we'll go through that later when we get to her bag because she carries a lot of that stuff. There may be some others in mine that are not in hers, but that's no thing. Okay, so I would also have a variety of some safety equipment, first aid items such as that. I'm going to have a first aid kit with bandages and antiseptic, triple antibiotic, whatever.
Ointments.
Just in case there's some broken skin, you want to put something on it and get it covered and get it treated. Unless that, of course, is the ultimate goal, is to break skin, which that's usually not my ultimate goal. I'm not looking to do that. But, you know, sometimes a flogger can, and it happened one time when we were playing, and that toy became that person's because it broke skin and drew blood. And, you know, here you go. That's yours now. We would put stuff on there because especially if you're in a public play space or someone's house, you don't want to pick something up and you definitely don't want to leave something behind. So that just helps. It's a courtesy thing to clean up after yourself anyway. And also it protects yourself from picking up any possible infections. If I'm carrying a bag, yet another bag with rope in it, you have rope, I believe. Well, we'll get to your bag in a minute. But if I have a bag of rope because I'm doing rope with someone as a pickup thing or pre-negotiated, whatever, I would have safety scissors for that or very sharp knives to get them out of the rope. But safety scissors are best because that way you don't risk cutting them if something happens and something goes wrong. You want to have that as a option. If there's going to be any kind of wax play, either you or someone else, I would have the candles in their own separate box.
You just one of those, like, almost Tupperware style containers. We right. usually keep our wax in. And we make our own candles.
We so do we make our own candles, those. Yeah. And they're either be, usually when we transport them, they're in a Rubbermaid type container or a zipper bag or something that will keep them separate so that if something happens and they melt, they don't get on everything.
You know. And then soy wax tends to...
It can melt faster because it's a lower temp.
If it rubs up against right. something, it leaves a sheen behind.
Yeah, and it's a lower temp. So tarps or some kind of plastic drop cloth or something. Because again, if you're playing in someone's house or public play space, you want to keep your area clean. And that is the easiest way to clean up the floor. I also have been known to play with knives. And they have their own bag as well. But it's a bag that will fit inside another bag. I have one of the bags that professional chefs use to carry knives around and zips up and it opens and each has their own pocket and they slide in and whatnot. And that's good because it keeps them separate from everything. And if anything gets on it, you can wrap it in something and put it back in there. And that way you don't contaminate your bag.
Right.
And also if you have done wax and you're scraping the wax off with a knife, you can do the same thing. You can wrap it up or put it in a Ziploc bag, carry some Ziploc bags and just put that in there. And then you can slide it right down in that pocket and you won't contaminate your bag. Also, and I know this is a lot of bags I carry.
You've got like six bags right now.
I know. I need a truck. So we might also be going and enjoying some cigars with friends.
I generally carry that for you, though.
So that would be and it's a small travel case that holds about 6 to 8 cigars, I believe. So it would be a smaller travel cigar case that we would carry if that was going with us. And it usually does. So that's pretty much the stuff that I would carry. Now, some of the things that I would carry will actually end up in your bag because we are in a relationship. And I will touch on those when we get to them as you start to go through your bag.
Okay. So what I take?
Yes.
So when I started out, I pretty much took a change of clothes because I didn't know what else to take with me. And I'm pretty sure it was just going to the dungeon, but mostly meeting you and talking about, you know, what I needed to take and what I needed to bring that actually developed my bag. My bag is fuller now than it was when I started. So I always take a change of clothes because you're not walking in usually in a tiny little tutu skirt and a corset, something like that. Because public vanilla space.
Street legal to the door.
Right. So I usually wear jeans and a t-shirt and I carry my, you know, whatever my outfit is for the night in my bag and my heels and things like that. And then there comes a point where it's, you know, I'm getting ready to play or I get a little more comfortable and generally the heels come off and I always keep a pair of knee-high socks in my bag because dungeon floors are gross. And even other people's homes, if it was a private party, I don't really want to walk around barefoot. So,
you know, a lot of people have a thing about feet. Some really like them. Some really don't. Either way, if everyone's walking with bare feet across those floors,
fungus is a thing.
I'm not putting my bare feet on it.
Right. I always take socks. One, because gross. And two, because I am always cold.
Right.
And knee-high socks are cute. And they keep my feet warm. And if my feet are warm, then the rest of me is usually happy. So yeah. I always bring socks. Sometimes also, a couple pair.
Can I just point out that also if you have a scene like, or maybe even an aftercare where you're cuddling on the floor, keep that in mind that you would want to be on a blanket, not just in a blanket or something. I know you're getting there.
You totally just took my next thing. I always bring a blanket and it's pretty large blanket that I carry with me.
Yeah, it's a regular full size
because
blanket.
I can wrap myself head to toe in it. And I generally do when I'm done with a scene. I'm usually really warm right when we finish and very cold immediately after. So I generally wrap the blanket around myself like a burrito and yeah. And then we cuddle. So blanket is usually a good idea, but I always bring a sweater as well, especially if it's cooler at night because we go outside on the smoke deck.
We do outside for the smoke deck or cigars outside or whatever, and you're cold.
Yes. And I actually have a silk robe that I keep in my bag as well because most of the time I don't want to lace myself back up in a corset after play.
Right.
But I don't want to walk around naked. So I have a black silk robe that I really love that I'll wear when I'm, you know, just coming down and I don't want to put on vanilla clothes yet, but I'm not usually after I play. I'm not as exhibitionist as I am up to that point.
Right.
And I don't know why, but
you're in your happy place and you don't really feel the need and you're cold.
And I'm a cold and I'm a little more vulnerable at that point, I think. So I tend to wrap up. So what else do I take? Okay. I have in my bag and I kind of put everything in my one bag because it's a decent sized bag and everything fits at this point in time. And I don't have to worry about cross contamination because it's all my stuff. So all the toys that are going to be used on me, whether it's by BK or if I arrange play with someone else, they're all in my bag. And I do not play with other people's toys. That's my personal preference. Everything that I have has either been given to me or made for me by BK or another friend. Because I do have some gifts from other friends, birthday presents and such. And every toy that I carry has only ever been used on me. So for safety purposes, it makes me feel a lot safer and I'm able to relax a lot more knowing that it's just my stuff. So in my bag I have floggers, and kind of in the order that we normally use them, I have a rope flogger or a couple of those. Mm-hmm. I have deer, cowhide, alpaca, buffalo, and those are all the different leathers that I have. And mm-hmm. then there's also a monkey fist flogger and a poison ivy flogger, both of which that you made. Do I have any other floggers? I have the Harley one, but I haven't been able to take it anywhere yet.
The Harley one is cowhide, though, so it's another cowhide suede.
But it's Harley Quinn.
But it has
awesome.
A big Harley hammer on the end of it, yeah.
And I'm very excited to use that, but I have not had the opportunity yet. I also usually have a couple paddles, a glittery green spoon that was given to me by a friend. I have a Wartenberg wheel. That is really fun once you're all warmed up and mm-hmm. run it across the red skin. It makes me giggle. We have this thing that BK made, and I call it a boomstick because I don't know what else to call it, but it's really, really cool, and it feels amazing, and it's this, like,
It's a padded stick. It's
basically a big, giant padded stick. And the padding on it's really thick, so he can really wail with it, and it just feels like
And it super sounds thuddy like and... I am really beating the ever-loving hell out of you.
But it feels really awesome. It's very thuddy, and I love it very much. And then I also have, like, handcuffs. I keep rope in my bag that's only used on me, because mm-hmm. rope can also transfer things, and I don't like sharing.
And I have some thumb cuffs that I'll drop in there from time to time.
Yes. I have my own nipple clamps that are in there. And, you know, any other toys that I pick up along the way. I'm sure the violet wand will at some point join.
Yeah, we need to get a good case for that. Yeah.
I carry a first aid kit. And generally now that we go together to play, I generally carry the first aid kit for both of us. That's generally
the first aid kit that we carry.
And I carry one of those automatic cold compresses that you shake up and mm-hmm. it turns cold. Because, you know, sometimes people need it. And sometimes we usually someone share might
turn an ankle or whatever. You know, we'll help people. That's what we do.
I actually carry a separate box of Band-Aids because there's never a sufficient number or size of them in the first aid kit. And sometimes they're fun Band-Aids, like Disney Princess Band-Aids. So littles.
Or Star Wars, because awesome.
Nerds. Yeah. I carry makeup wipes, like face wipes, because you get hot and sweaty and mm-hmm. things run. And I carry extra makeup and deodorant. I carry disinfecting wipes just in case, because sometimes the spray isn't handy or you're in a place that isn't as well equipped as a dungeon and you want to clean off the surface before and after you use it. So I carry disinfecting wipes. I carry Tylenol and Advil just in case that I've shared before with other people. I always carry candy or chocolate. There's usually a bag of chocolate in my bag.
I usually would carry candy in my bag. Typically in the past, I would have Hershey's Kisses and all the littles would come get sugared up by me and they would hang out with me, which wasn't really my goal with that. It's for, you know, in case sometimes when you're playing, the blood sugar can drop and you need to...
It does help with the aftercare. It helps in the aftercare.
It really helps with when you hit sub-drop. And some people would rather not have chocolate, and so, you know, I would carry some hard candies as well, sometimes like Jolly Ranchers or peppermints, and then some Hershey's Kisses. Typically, that's the variety that I would carry, and you have pretty much that. So
yeah, I think I've taken like the caramel M&Ms before, although I don't eat them anymore because they tried to kill me. Yeah. I've taken M&Ms. Hershey bars don't usually survive as well in a bag, so you want something small that isn't easily broken or melted.
Right.
So that's depending on the time of year, Hershey's Kisses are summertime
is not
good.
Too good in Texas for chocolate, but M&Ms are a thing that work well.
Because, you know, they melt in your mouth, not in your hands or bag.
Yeah, not in your bag. So that's good. It keeps it off of everything else.
And I'm a big proponent of I carry extra plastic bags in case anything needs to be wrapped up before it gets put away. Mm-hmm. I carry Ziploc bags for, you know, I'll even put the candy in a Ziploc even though it's already in its own bag because I really don't want to ruin my toys because toys are expensive and I love my toys. For me, it's really important to have all of my own toys, and I carry a lot of them because you never know where the mood and the scene is going to take you sometimes. So I make sure that I have all of the things that I love. I carry my own cane bag. I have several canes and crops that are just mine.
Yes.
And one that looks like a lightsaber. It's mm-hmm. pretty awesome.
And you have your bit gag is in there.
Oh, my gags. Yeah. I also have gags. I have two.
You have a ball gag too, don't you?
Yes.
You have a ball gag and a bit gag. We haven't really used those yet because the situation hasn't really been...
I don't know. It just hasn't come up.
We haven't been able to play. And
I think it's important for the bottom to have their own bag. Even if you don't have your own toys, eventually you might. You want to actually have stuff to take care of yourself. You know, bring your own candy because you don't know if the top is going to have it. Bring your own blanket, because do you necessarily want to use a blanket that's carried by a top and you don't know where it's been?
She's cringing because of one that I had in my car, but I warned her.
Yes, you also said I could throw it away.
And you did.
Bring your own, you know, bring your own clothes. If you tend to get cold, bring something to stay warm. Bring your own personal care items. I mean, that's...
Yeah.
You're responsible for taking care of yourself. Even though some DOMs are really, really great at aftercare, I tend to prefer at least using my own things just like I do in play. So
it's a good thing. Yeah. Always try and prepare for
every possible scenario.
All the scenarios. Maybe, you know, you don't need to bring a life jacket in case the Titanic is going to sink, because, you know, that's not a scenario that you're going to potentially be in. But, you know, as far as an emergency, you want to be sure and have candy, juice, some kind of snack for afterwards.
Because and the nice thing about help. The dungeon was there was always food and drink
yes,
there.
Yes, that was nice at the public dungeon. We had always food and drink. And but, you know, if you're going to go to these public parties, you want to be sure and carry a snack or something.
Bottles of water. I usually carry my own bottles of water.
Bottles of water. And maybe even orange juice or soda, even if you don't drink soda, but just in case you need to get that sugar up. Yeah. You know, your blood sugar can drop.
And I will say that my bag tends to stay packed because unless, you know, we take stuff out to play at home, it goes right back in there. I don't have to clean my stuff as often because it's only used on me. So that's a really nice side effect of having my own toys. I don't have to worry about the necessity of cleaning them on a regular basis. Your bag gets unpacked a lot more often because you out things that, you know, okay, people are interested in different things.
Right. I clean things. I switch things out. I add new things. I take things out that have been there. I have some toys that I made that have had birthdays. I mean, not singular, plural. They've had birthdays. That doesn't mean that they're not wanted. It just means that they've not found the right person yet. And not everything that has a birthday has been used. So, you know, if you're out there, think about Toy Story and those poor toys that weren't played with and how sad they were.
You trying to get people to give your toys a home?
Yeah, I got some toys that need a home. Just saying. And that's what we put in our bags. Yes. I hope that was very helpful to some people. I mean, I imagine it would spawn some thoughts and conversations. If you would like to discuss that further with us, you can join us on the our FetLife page. We have we'll have a link to the WordPress site, which will have some of the notes from this. There's a link to that.
I'll start a discussion about what's in your bag.
We can start that. And then we also have the Adventures in Kink group on FetLife, which you can also be found through our page. We've thrown a couple discussions out there.
That's what I was saying, that I would put this up as another discussion.
So PETA will put this up as a discussion in the group, and we can have some further discussion there. Not everyone will have everything the same in their bag, and some people will have more than one bag, and that's totally fine. What you want is what's right for you and your situation.
Right.
And it may be different from one week to the next.
And, you know, we may learn new things to put in the bag.
That's true. Okay. So I want to talk briefly about, since we did mention that the year is rapidly flying by, the holidays are coming up. It's September now. October's right around the corner, followed by November and December. And there are a lot of people in our local area, the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, that are homeless. They can't afford food, blankets. It always breaks our hearts.
And we also have a lot of refugees from Houston right now.
Yes, we do. And I can't imagine the devastation that they are going to go to home to if they're able to go home. But this holiday season, I have a friend, and I've not cleared this with them to use their name, so I'm not using their name, but I am giving them credit, that every year would gather and collect as many coats and jackets as possible and would take the family, kids and all, to shelters to hand those out to those that needed them. And I thought that was just a beautiful thing to teach the kids and stuff to give back like that. And I wanted to start a coat drive now in order to have enough that we might can actually help people and make a difference, because it came out, the Farmer's Almanac came out, it's supposed to be a very cold, bitter winter for us, and it's supposed to have a lot of snow, and we want to make sure everyone has at least some jacket or coat of some sort in order to be able to survive. Shelters can only do so much. So we are going to try and set up, and I know it's coming up really quickly, is Fourth Friday this week. If you have some coats or something, you can find myself, BK Fletch, or Princess PETA. We are going to be there. And if you have a coat or jacket that you would like to donate, or if you would like to go to a thrift store or Goodwill or whatever and maybe pick up a few at low prices or whatever for those, then we will collect those, and we're going to see that those get to the, if we have a lot of coats, we make it hit more than one shelter. It would be really awesome if we could do that. And, but that's it. I really felt like it's something that we needed to do. I'm going to get in touch with my friend this week to see if they're still doing that. And if they are, hopefully that I'm going to let them in on the supply of coats that hopefully we have coming in. So that's just something I wanted to mention right now before we get into the book club.
All right.
So book club.
Book club. We are on chapter 3 of Screw the Roses, Send Me the Thorns, The Romance and Sexual Sorcery of Sadomasochism by Philip Miller and Molly Devon. And chapter 3 is called The Politics of Very Strange Bedfellows, Sensible SM Relationships and Dangerous Liaisons. So some of this chapter was really, really good.
Yes.
Some of it was kind of cringeworthy, and some of it was very, very dated, like BBSs and AOL.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't throw MySpace in there. Although I think MySpace is too new for this book.
MySpace is too new for this book. You're right.
So the chapter starts out with talking about the different motivations that people have for getting into the lifestyle, some of which are more above board than others, and some people who, you know, only actually ever stick to the fantasy of it, never actually put it into practice. And but then it actually goes into how people get involved and how to meet people in the lifestyle. Now, the section on convincing your existing partner to try BDSM, I didn't really care for, because it seemed like a lot of manipulation to me, where it, in my personal opinion, it seems like it would make more sense to just be straightforward and honest and say, hey, I, you know, heard of this thing, or I read about this, or I watched 50 Shades of Grey and I thought, hey, that looks interesting. Do you want to try it?
I agree with you there. There was a lot of, it seemed like a lot of subterfuge for, I thought we were supposed to have open and honest communication. And that's not just speaking about like poly or anything, just basic relationship stuff.
I get that some people might be hesitant or afraid to bring up a new interest in BDSM with somebody that they have an existing relationship with for fear of rejection. But if the core principle of what we do is going to be open and honest communication, then we need to start that way.
Right. I believe so.
So I just kind of, I'm not going to go into any detail on that section, because I think that honest, straightforward is the best way to go.
We'll let people read it and decide for themselves.
The law of supply and demand. They go into some detail here about how there are more submissive guys than anything else in the lifestyle, and how hard it is for them to find the D type for them, which I don't think that's necessarily the case, at least not in our area.
You know, I was thinking about this.
It was probably back during more of the...
It may still be true, but because it was that way back when this was written, a lot of them have already gone underground, because they would go out in public and no one would have anything to do with them, and it was disheartening, and so they would go back home. So they're still out there, but they're not coming out in public.
We see plenty of submissive men in our lifestyle. I just don't think that they're overwhelmingly more populous than the rest of us. I think we have a pretty even mix as far as I've seen, but then that's my limited exposure.
I
kind
of feel it's a little more even than a lot of people think. I think there's a lot of everything out there, because we've had this giant influx in recent years.
Right.
It's becoming more mainstream and more popular. And I think it has kind of leveled the playing field, so to speak, where you have more dominance, more tops, more bottoms, and a lot of switches.
So then the challenge becomes finding someone who's real and genuine and serious about the lifestyle, and not just
right, not a poser,
getting their kicks, and yeah,
not a pretender. Like a person that sent you a blind friend request, or not that one.
I got a message the other day from someone in our local area, not Dallas, but more specific to where we actually live, and it was completely out of the blue. Someone I've never spoken with or met or anything before, who basically said, I read your profile. I see that you play with other people. Do you want to play with me? I'll host at my apartment.
How many red flags just flew up?
I was like, no, thank you. And if you read my profile, perhaps you missed the part with my personal rules for play that mentioned that I don't mix sex and play. They're not synonymous to me. I reserve sex for my personal relationship, and play has a different meaning for me. That's one of the things I have a problem with this book, is that it relates them a little too tightly. But yeah, I did respond, but mm-hmm. and I tried to be polite, but for some reason he never got back to me once I said I wouldn't have sex.
Yeah, I mean, you looked at the profile and it was all barebacking and breeding, and
yeah,
I mean, the very first group was something along those lines. I don't remember exactly what it was.
The very first group was, I'm only in the lifestyle for sex. Yeah.
That's what it was, yeah.
So I went, no thank you.
I'm just here for the booty.
I mean, I don't play with people I don't know. And even if I did know you, you're clearly only in it for the sex. So, not interested, thanks.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they even mentioned in the book, and you know, this was 20 years ago, they mentioned in the book that there are a lot of people who play at being dominant, and it's hard to find someone who really truly is. So
yeah,
that hasn't changed.
That's true.
But I think it's true from the other side as well.
I believe that is correct. A lot of things, it's really funny because they go through a lot of things in here in this chapter, and then I'm like, oh really, is that a thing really? Because we still do these things, but mm-hmm. we actually have buzzwords or whatever for them now, and we'll get into that in a minute here.
Yeah, it talks about one of the best ways to find people in the scene is, you know, magazines.
Do they still make those
personal ads in newspapers? BBS.
Ooh, the BBS. Yes.
So we're thinking, okay, so maybe those are a little outdated. You know, we now have more broad internet choices. We have FetLife. We have Collar, other, and that's not the only Collar Me.
Collar Space or Collar Me or whatever they're called this month. There's actually Whippler is another BDSM.
Okay, Cupid has a huge lifestyle community. They have questions specific to BDSM that kind of narrow down your options down to that.
Mm-hmm.
But then it actually, after it gets through some of the stuff that's a little more cringeworthy and a little outdated, it really does get into some really good information.
There really is some good stuff here, yes.
And you know, it goes to show that there are some things time doesn't change.
Right.
Some safe practices, some ways of interacting as human beings that don't change. So it talks about the things you should look for in a dom, being someone who you can communicate with. We've actually talked about this. If it's mm-hmm. somebody who's really hot and swings a wicked flogger and, you know, super popular, but you can't come out of your shell and talk to them and communicate with them, then they're probably not the right person for you, because that open line of communication is really important.
Mm-hmm.
Someone whose first concern is safety, someone who respects your limits, someone who knows his own limits
mm-hmm.
and limitations.
And that one is big.
Mm-hmm. And is willing to admit to them and get training if it's something that they're wanting to do.
I'll tell you, as a dominant, it is unnerving at times, so, because you know, you're the dom, you're the man, or the woman, the you're the dominant in charge of this thing, and they want to go further than your skill set will allow you to safely. Now, do you have to say, well, wait a minute, I need to go do some research and some practice, or heaven forbid, I need to let someone else try that with you to see if that's something you actually would enjoy if I were to learn it? Because otherwise I could be wasting time learning that and you don't like it. And then we find out you like this instead when I could have been learning that.
Right.
So, you know, but now me as the domling man has to go ask someone else for help. And I can see where a lot of people they will cringe on that. It becomes a problem for them. But knowing that you have limitations and recognizing that and not being afraid to step out and learn new things, that's where the importance is there.
Someone who values the submissive and considers him or her their equal.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when it's time to drop the fantasy, you're equal partners in the relationship. Someone who considers the enjoyment of their partner on par with their own pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who knows the difference between fantasy and reality.
That is huge. We live in real life, not second life.
Yes.
There's a reason that is called Second Life.
Someone, I like this one. Someone willing to try everything that he intends for his partner on his own body first. While he may not enjoy a whip stroke, he must understand its feel. I like that. I think mm-hmm. that's true. I think somebody who is going to top other people should be willing to actually try out the sensations on themselves.
Mm-hmm. Because, and that's how I was brought up in the when I first started.
I mean, you don't know what kind of pressure to use if you've never felt it. And you don't know what it's going to feel like to your and submissive if you're not. It
never fails. The biggest argument is, well, just because you hit me with it doesn't mean that I'm going to hit them in the same way. Well, no, that's entirely true. But this is what it feels like. And you need to know that.
You have to have some kind of basis for understanding.
There has to be a baseline somewhere.
Right. And then the last thing to look for in a dom is someone who's patient and kind and takes time to understand their submissive.
Patience is key. You don't just bark orders and expect them to be done. Sometimes they have to get in the right mindset. Sometimes it takes a few minutes. Sometimes it takes a few hours. Sometimes it just doesn't happen.
Right.
And you have to be patient and recognize that, and you have to be able to work with them. Because for me, one of the most important parts of being your dominant is your personal safety is my responsibility. Not from other people necessarily or anything, but in this, when we're playing, I am watching out for you because you are trying to take your place mentally, emotionally. You're trying to grow.
But you also trust me to communicate when something's off.
I do.
In that way, I'm also responsible.
And hopefully I would be able to sense it because I tend to be able to sense that in people, but sometimes you just can't. Because sometimes, especially if it's something new, you may be trying to process it, and how you're processing things sometimes is negative, but you don't show that. You just look like you're processing. So that's where that communication is important. So right. And you have to be able to recognize those things, yes.
It also goes into the other side, what to look for in a submissive, the things that you should be seeking out. And specifically, communication is also important from the sub. They have a responsibility to tell you if you're going too far or if something's wrong. So the submissive traits that you should look for: someone who respects herself or himself, someone who's not seeking out real abuse.
Yes.
Someone who has a good sense of reality versus fantasy. Someone who's not looking for you to take over her life, but to enhance it.
That is important.
That is so important.
I cannot tell you how many people they're looking for their dom. I'm like, you don't need, and I told people this, you need to find someone who, you need to be a complete person. Mm-hmm. And you need someone who will enhance your life, that you don't need someone to complete you. You need to be complete in yourself and find someone who will enhance you. And that's exactly what that book said 20 years ago. And I've been saying that for, I couldn't tell you how many years, to how many people I've said that to. And it's the truth. You need to be a complete person in and of yourself, and then find someone who compliments you and enhances you and encourages you to be more than you are and to be better, and that you would encourage them the same way to be better and more than they are.
And it works both ways.
It does. It works both ways.
Because I know that, you know, you're very supportive of me and you're always encouraging me to be my best self. But you also tell me that I bring out the best in you. So it's a mutually beneficial relationship.
Yes, it is.
Okay. I know this one is one that's really important to you. Someone you can trust not to blame you later for dominating her. For example, avoid someone who might ask to be taken sexually and then cry rape.
Yes. You know,
it happens.
It happens a lot. This is why we play with a clear mind. We go into it, you know, unaltered.
And with negotiations.
And with lots of negotiations. This is why when I play with people I've not played with before, this is why sex is nowhere in the cards at all. It's, but I want you to take me, but no.
And, you know, sometimes if you're playing with someone new, it doesn't hurt to have written negotiations, at least written agreements, so that you're covered mm-hmm. in the case. I mean, because we're not trying to victim blame at any point here. We're not talking about people who are actually taken advantage of. We're talking about a small group of people who change their mind at a later date and call it assault rather than owning up to what it really was they made a mistake and changed their mind later. And
when they never said anything,
right,
and never gave an, I mean, it's, yeah, it can be a fight. There's, but I was embarrassed really. Well, you know,
and then you sorry, own it and you learn from you it and you grow from it.
Right.
We've all had those experiences. So no, we're not at all talking about the people who have actually had their consent violated, because that's a whole different ball game.
It's a whole different ball game. And if you have had your consent violated, hopefully you popped up immediately and said, whoa, that's not right. Call it right then and there.
And but some people are afraid to.
Some people are afraid to. And that's a shame.
I've been in not quite that situation, but I've been in situations where I knew that what was going on was not right and I wasn't comfortable with it, but I also didn't feel able to speak up. Someone wise enough to let you learn who she is, what pleases her, and what she wants. And then the last thing is someone who does not make demands. So not pushy, but still communicates and ask for what she wants, but doesn't demand it. That's
okay. No, though, what that, I believe what that's talking about is ones who will give ultimatums. You're going to do this, or I'm going to walk out and I'm going to tell all your friends what you've done and this and that. No, we don't out people. We don't do that. That's bad. Bad, bad.
And then once we know what we're looking for, it talks about ways to meet people. And it, a lot of this is really outdated. It talks about, but it does talk about organizations and groups, public venues. But then it goes into magazine, newspaper ads, and I mean, it spends a lot of time talking about the newfangled BBS system.
That newfangled BBS system, which, you know, like,
is not newfangled anymore and barely exists.
Antiquated now. But, you know, ALT is a group that meets in Dallas, and the group that it spawned from was a BBS group.
It's more of a news group, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's a news group, but still, it was on a, you could get it through,
right,
whatever. Anyway, alt.bdsm.something, it's in there.
It does actually mention that in
here. It mentions that group specifically, and that's what that alt group spawned from.
Which is kind of awesome.
When then also spawned the alt.com website, was, I believe, also from that particular
group. I mean, luckily for us, 20 years later, we have a lot more resources for meeting people, and not just, you know, the D or S type too for us, but friends and community and places to learn and grow and get information and hear other people's stories and lessons learned. And, and there's just so much valuable stuff out there. There are a lot of personal blogs for BDSM. There are podcasts, believe it or not, about BDSM. So, you know, and there's a lot more movies now. Do you know of
any? I mean, I would like to listen to a podcast on
I know
it.
A few, I do. Yeah. They specifically mentioned, you know, like books or movies, and they called out 9.5 weeks, which is not the most recent.
That was actually in the 70s, wasn't it?
It was quite a bit ago. I think it was 80s. I think it was
It
more
may
80s.
Have been early 80s, but it was way back there.
So, you know, we do have some more recent, and even without the 50 Shades, we have...
Right, Secretary.
Secretary is a great movie.
And there's several
And I'm drawing
others.
A blank now on everything
Quills.
Else, but...
Quills, which is the story of Marquis de Sade. I have that on DVD.
There's the new documentary coming out about the guy who wrote the Wonder Woman comics, who happened to be a
Professor Marston and the Wonder Women.
Yep. And he was into polyamory, and he was into BDSM and bondage. And I'm really looking forward to seeing that, because...
Who knew Wonder Woman's lasso was because the creator was into bondage?
Well, he did.
Well, he
it
did.
He actually came up with a concept in the back room of a sex shop.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that awesome?
That is amazing. So it makes me see Wonder Woman with a whole new light.
Yeah, I still see her for what she is. Totally
she wears a
awesome.
Corset. I mean, yeah. and a whip. So.
And a sword and a shield and.
She's badass.
Lasso that makes you tell the truth.
Honesty and communication.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm really looking forward to seeing that movie. I think it'll be really great.
It's going to be really great.
So we have a lot more resources now, and I'm really excited about that. And there's references come up to the lifestyle and BDSM and all the so many TV shows, and and it's just casually mentioned now, and without that scorn that we came to associate with.
Really funny, and it was so hilarious when it happened, and everyone, that's all they could talk about was Sheldon. I guess I should give you a spanking. You know the episode immediately. And what did she do? Oh, what? And she turned over his lap immediately and was like, okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Go. Yeah. Which is exactly what you would do. But it was just so priceless. I'm going to have to discipline you. I'm going to have to give you a spanking. Just so priceless.
And so, I like that there's so many mentions now that are not in a derogatory manner. It's just casual. And I hope it's a sign of the lifestyle becoming a little more accepted and a little more mainstream. But I think we still have a long way to go.
We definitely have a long way to go.
Okay, so if you haven't picked up the book yet, you're missing out. There's a section in here that calls out some of the characters that you come across in the lifestyle. Yeah,
the character cards.
And they're hilarious, you know. And on the D side, on the Dom side, they talk about the virgin who's never actually done anything, but
totes that whip on his belt.
That $40 sex toy shop whip that falls apart the first time he tries to use it. The celestial princess with the S's as dollar signs because she's doing it for the money. The Peter Pan. It's all about the fantasy and does not live in the real world. The one true master or mistress who thinks that their way is the only way and that they want total domination of every aspect of the submissive's life. I am your
true master.
The very married butt. The guy that doesn't tell you that he's married and never follows through on any of their promises or commitments they can't.
You texted me? I'm sorry. I must have missed that. My phone must have been on silent.
Mm-hmm.
Because my wife and kids were watching TV with me. But.
Right. The performer. The top who is only... Who's putting on a show and it's more concerned with the observers than the person that they're playing with.
I believe if people got the book and read these in great detail on these cards,
you recognize people you know.
You would recognize every single one of them as someone that you know in the community. Everyone is listed here. I'm telling you, it is priceless. This thing is just, and it's 20 years old, but it's on the nose.
The Macho Man, who's basically just using the BDSM lifestyle as a cover for misogyny, which is not how they put it, but that's how I interpreted it. Crude, lewd, and always horny. Boy, are those guys the dominant group on FET, right?
Yeah, we mentioned your messages there.
They basically let you know, or you know, they change their type based on what you're looking for, and they're really only in it for the sex. And then there's the S types that you also might want to avoid. The Cinderella, whose life is a mess, can't hold a job, can't get the training to hold a job, has no intention, and blames every misfortune on their past or their situation and is looking for someone to rescue them. The Wonder Woman, who wants to be controlled by someone stronger than her, but no such person exists. And then the last one, the wannamate, who is desperately searching for a permanent relationship and didn't find it in the vanilla world, so is now trying the lifestyle, basically.
I know them too.
Okay, so all that aside, the last three pages of this chapter were the best and the most important because it talks about safety suggestions for meeting people, and then it goes into manners in that lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to read some of this off. Safety suggestions for meeting, and it says through ads or BBS, but also FET and any other way that you're meeting new people for the first time.
Yes.
Use a post office box for correspondence. Basically, never give your name, phone number, or address on a website.
Right.
And for those of us who have to be really more cautious, don't put your picture up. Or at least not your face.
Right.
Because now they can backtrace those pictures and do reverse Google searches and find you.
For people who are wondering, yes, I have a P.O. box.
Yeah.
For the toys.
Business, yeah.
And it's not because I don't trust people. It's not because any of that. It's just
for the safety of your family.
It's for the safety of the family. That's why.
Check out the person you're interested in by getting references. It's always a good idea. If someone is active in the community, other people will know them and will be able to vouch for them. They actually say women should be given, the men should be the ones giving the phone numbers, not the women, which I think might be a little bit of an outdated notion, but that's just for safety practices. And I think it's more in the days before cell phones, because you could reverse check someone's phone and find their address. And,
yes.
Yeah. Start by corresponding through the mail or email or, you know, internet site or Kick. It's probably best not to give your cell phone number out unless you really know somebody,
right,
or have met them in person.
And there's apps that you can generate
fake a phone
number.
Numbers, yeah.
Like Pinger is one that'll
text free.
And basically what it does is let you choose the phone number, and then
you can give it whatever name you want.
And then you're texting to whatever number they've given you, and it may all be on a thing like that, or you may actually have their number. And some of them, like the text free, you can actually buy minutes and actually talk on that if you want to talk to them.
But, you know, generally don't give your personal information to someone that you've just met. Okay, I disagree with number 5. It says exchanging photos is a good idea and avoids embarrassment before you meet. And their point is that, you know, maybe you won't like the look of the person, so avoid that embarrassment in person. I personally think that unless you've actually know someone pretty well, you shouldn't be sending them pictures, because nowadays that stuff can be put online and,
you know,
can be outed.
20 years ago, catfishing wasn't really a thing.
True. Although I guess it must have been a little bit, because...
Well...
I mean, it was more of a, hey, I'm 6 foot tall and
back in
super
the day, you
fit.
You couldn't take a picture of yourself on your phone and they have it in 2 seconds. It was, you had to mail them a picture.
Right. And people couldn't post that picture online and ruin your life either. Or go do a Google search of the image and find a similar and track you down. So no. I disagree that exchanging photos is a good idea. Arrange to meet first at a public place. And then... when you finally get together with your potential prince or princess charming, make sure a trusted friend knows exactly where you'll be, with whom, and for how long.
Wow, this sounds familiar.
Yes, and please stay tuned at the end to listen to our message for safe calls.
Yes.
And then it goes into make a plan with a friend for emergency measures, which is the safe call system, which they didn't call it that, but it existed 20 years ago. You know,
if
you know, make an arrangement with a friend. If you don't call them by a certain time, they call the police on your behalf.
This thing goes into detail about a safe call, but it does never call it that, but that's what it is.
Yeah. We just named it, I guess, in the last 20 years. And then the last section is on manners and the lifestyle. And basically, and these things are still true today. The my kink is okay, but yours is not, to people,
mm-hmm.
Which your kink is not my kink, but that's okay. That's the way we prefer to say.
We say all kink is valid, but your kink is not my kink.
Right.
That's
pretty
much how I go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it basically says, hey, you know, don't shame other people's kinks. You never know. You may turn out to like that exact thing once you try it. But otherwise, even if you don't, it kind of makes you an asshole to shame other people for their kinks.
Yes, it does.
Public scenes are invitations to watch, not to join in.
That's very important.
Do not interrupt a scene. If a top needs help, they will ask for it. Don't talk to the dom, because you'll break their concentration and you can cause an accident to happen. Don't talk to the sub, because you can break their concentration and take them out of the nice place that they'd worked so hard to get to.
I'll say this. I have been talked to during a scene, and the accident that happened was the flogger that was aiming towards the sub
accidentally hit that person.
Turned and hit them in the face.
Ouch.
Wait, look, I'm focusing here. Wait, you want me to focus there? Pop. Oh, don't talk to me. I'm busy.
It's considered courtesy to ask the person who appears to be in charge before talking to a collared submissive. But asking a dom that you don't know to allow you to use his submissive is tacky. And don't do it. Because, ew. It talks about who pays the expenses of the evening is usually the guy, but... I think that really, you know, you discuss that amongst yourselves. That's a personal relationship thing that, you know, etiquette says.
You figure that out on your own.
Yeah. Most gifts are forever. Colors are an exception.
Yes.
And they talk about, and this I think is still true for the most part when you're talking about like colors that are a symbol of a true DS relationship. They are hugely significant. And when they are given, they are considered still the property of the dominant. And when, if that relationship does not turn out to be the forever that they had hoped for, the collar is given back to the dominant. And usually a lot of people will do an uncollaring ceremony, just as kind of symbolic releasing of the power exchange.
Mm-hmm.
And it helps with some closure. But collars that are just for play and things like that and bought by the submissive, those stay the submissives. Anyway, they said the last part is most etiquette and proper procedures can be observed if you'll just step back and watch before you jump in and think you know everything, because you can and you learn a lot. People are more than willing to help, so ask questions. And yeah, that was chapter three.
That's chapter three.
Some good information, some information, and some
very outdated information.
It's about typical for this book, really.
You know what we witnessed in that chapter? The birth of the information superhighway.
We really did, yeah.
We watched the internet be born.
At least the kinky side of the internet.
That's right. Well, 90% of the internet's born.
Is the kinky. Yeah, true.
So basically there's 10% of the internet that I've not seen. I hope everyone's enjoying our show. Thank you for listening to us. Every download, we have a thing that we get to watch, and we're watching that number grow and grow all the time.
It's exciting. It's really I get excited every time I see that a couple more people have downloaded one of our episodes, because, you know, we're doing this because we love it. We love our community. We love the lifestyle. And we hope to put some good information out there. We would love to have feedback. Please join us on our FetLife group. There's an Adventures in Kink group on Fet. And
send us a message at through FetLife on the Adventures in Kink profile.
Or email us at adventuresinkink@gmail.com.
Lots of ways to get in touch with us. We're still taking suggestions. If there's a topic that you would like to hear us discuss, or find someone with knowledge, because we like talking to other people, especially knowledgeable people we can have really good, intelligent conversations with, because that's kind of one of our kinks. Intelligence is a kink for sure for both of us. And, you know, we'll find someone if we absolutely can.
Send us feedback, send us ideas. We want to hear from you guys, because we don't want to feel like we're talking into the void.
And we feel sometimes like we're talking to ourselves, and then we'll see another download.
And we get excited.
Yeah. So if you've been on Podbean and you've not created an account, but you've listened, we appreciate it. But if you create an account, go ahead and follow us. You can actually set that it will automatically download when a new episode is uploaded. And that will save you the time of wondering when it's there. It will automatically appear for you. It's really amazing.
Thank you again for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
We'll see you next week. Stay kinky, stay safe. Perverted, stay safe. 'Let a Dragon Be Your Safe Call.' House of the Faithful Dragons is offering Safe Call as a service. Just call them and give them the details, the date and time, the location, the names of the people involved, and they'll contact you with a prearranged time via text or call to get the all clear from you, or to summon the police on your behalf if you cannot. 972-591-3730. That's 972-591-3730 from 8 a.m. to 11 p.m. Central Time. Outside of these hours, someone will call you back as soon as possible. That's 972-591-3730 between 8 a.m. and 11 p.m. Central Time, and let a dragon be your safe call. You know how you like your rope. Our friends at Minawashi cater to those that are particular about their rope and choose to condition it themselves. Let them provide you the highest quality unfinished jute rope so you can have your rope your way. Custom rope available upon request. Go to www.mynawashi.com. That's www.mynawashi.com. Or email them at mynawashi@gmail.com.
October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
Statistics show 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer in their lifetime, and it affects many others, family, friends, and loved ones. Breast cancer is the second leading cause of death among women. To help the fight and raise awareness this October, Minawashi Rope, along with a collection of rope vendors, will be donating 20% of all sales from their pink rope and pink rope kits to their favorite breast cancer charity to help eradicate this disease. Head to www.pinkropes.com to find Pink Rope campaign products. I torture you. Take